Hello and welcome to Ask Margot. This is where you can get your sticky questions answered. I'm Margot Coatsworth and I'm very happy to be here today to talk to you about the stuff of our lives. I introduce a different aspect of me each time, so this is not too boring for you. Today I'd like to talk about my being an author and writer. You might say, aren't they the same thing? But apparently writing is what you do first, and author is what happens after you've published a book. I wrote a cookbook, and that was my first book. It's called Take Five and Cook, the dinner book, and it's all about cooking with just five ingredients, so fairly liberating, I think. Then I wrote a book about the transformational power of positive words, and you hear me constantly rabbiting on about how important that is. I called it Take My Word for It Every Day, and it was a kind of message each day about how to make life better by using positive words, by choosing the words we use. Then I moved into the mating game and wrote several small books on love and romance, a journal, an ABC of love, and then two more books, It's Love 101 and 102. There was huge fun doing the research for that book, well, all of them actually. We had a dinner party survey, which even the most well-behaved and sedate couples got quite excited about. There were questions like, what constitutes a great kiss? You could try that next time you've got a gathering of friends around and you'll be surprised what you hear. You should have seen the people light up when they considered all the possibilities. I must say, though, that some people sadly thought, oh, I've never even considered that, or we don't kiss anymore, really, which is very sad, but often true. We must keep romance alive in our relationships, and it's up to each of us to do our part. Think about that today. What can you do to promote a bit of romance in your life? Give your other half a proper intentional kiss or a compliment, maybe in a slightly foxy way. I just think sometimes we get tied up with the everydayness of life and we forget that this whole area of our life is not supposed to fade away. I often ask my single friends about romance in their lives. Even if there's nothing doing, they feel quite excited that it might be possible. Romance in the beginning is often nerve-wracking, I think, going through the early stages, but then it can become a game that lasts a long time if you decide you want to play it. Anyway, that's just a little romantic food for thought. Write to me if you want to see that survey and I'll dig it out and send it to you. So our first question today is on the subject, actually. It's from Bob about love and romance, and he's written that he can never tell if his wife is interested in playing. That's my word for it. Playing is a word I use for making whoopee, which is an old-fashioned word, which I looked up, actually, and it means, firstly, to celebrate wildly, which I quite like the idea of, and secondly, to have sex. So we're going with the second one, but the two do work well together. I think many men would agree that they can't always tell if a woman is interested in playing. For a woman, she only needs a look or a gesture or a touch to indicate her interest, and a man will already have his motor running, so to speak. But what if you've been together for ages and there's not much of that pre-play happening? Here's an idea. A friend once gave me two pillow slips, and on one side was the word oui in French, yes, and on the other side was non, a very universal word. I thought, wouldn't it be fun to have these two pillowcases, hopefully with the yes side showing each day, unless you had a headache or had taken the vapours. I looked that up and it also means feeling weak or sad, i.e. not in the mood in this case. So there's a way of communicating if you're on the spot for a bit of play or if you find it hard to say those words. I have a friend who often leaves parties saying they're going home to do some baking. That's code for them. Bob, you could ask your lady if she would like to choose a word that she could drop into conversation, which of course you will be listening to intently at any time, day or night, that will indicate she is in play mode. It reminds me of the Addams Family and Morticia, who, whenever she spoke French, her husband would just be beside himself with joy. That was their code. The thing about women in a long-term relationship is that they get caught up with the practical demands of life, especially with children. So they don't always feel very frisky. You know, ain't nobody got time for that. And if you have made them cross, boys, by some misdemeanor of yours, even a tiny one like not putting the rubbish out when you should have, she will not play with you because she will not consider you worthy. The most important piece of advice I can give you is that you must cultivate and woo her. It's a fact that the more you play, the more interested you are. Once a man tried to give me the stats on that. It's true that the body gets tuned in and thinks, oh, that was fun, let's have more. I once did a little survey on how much time men devoted to foreplay. This was just my asking the question, you understand. And quick as a wink, one man, before he had time to think, said, for his wife, 3 days. I couldn't help but smile. It may sound a bit sad for him, but I also thought, wow, here's a man who is dedicated to his wife and his cause. Bob, bring her flowers. When's the last time you told her she was it for you? When did you take her out for no reason? And I don't mean because it's a birthday or an anniversary, I mean for no reason. And did you take care of all the details so she doesn't have to book a babysitter, cook the family dinner first, organise the children, pay the babysitter, book the restaurant? Do you see what I mean? If you're going to do the date thing, take care of every aspect so she can just get dressed at her leisure and be in a great anticipatory mood for a date. If there are no small people in the house, you can still open the car door, take her coat or wrap, do those little extra things. When did you tell her she was beautiful? Whether we women are beautiful or not is never the point. As women, we need the man who has picked us to tell us that to them we're beautiful. Just like we tell them how strong and smart and good-looking they are, even when all they're doing is putting out the rubbish. Words for women are an aphrodisiac. I'm just going to say that one again. Words are and can be an aphrodisiac. I think one of the most powerful. Why do you suppose all those Latin chaps can get a woman to swoon so fast? They already know this. It's words. You have to step up, boys, and use words to be seductive. You have to engage your clever brain to figure out what will light her up. But there's one more thing, and that's about love languages. Read up on that if you don't know about it. But I'll sum it up for you. If acts of service is the way she feels loved, and you won't be consistent in putting the rubbish out, you'd rather bring her flowers because gifts and giving of gifts is your love language, then you've got it wrong. Work with her in her love language, not in yours. You must do the things that make her feel loved, appreciated, and sexy. Women need to feel sexy to want to throw themselves wholeheartedly into the matter. It's the same for boys. It's the boomerang effect. So, to sum up, the pillows are a fun idea. 2, make a game of it and ask her to choose a word to drop into conversation, which you will then have to pick up on because you'll be listening so attentively to her. 3, cultivate and woo her. Flowers, a date, that kind of thing. 4, begin your dance of foreplay. And when I say foreplay, I'm not talking physical, I'm talking about focus and emotion. Begin it long before the moment. 5, use your words. If you make her feel good about herself and feel desirable, she will act that way. It'll be like a key to her engine. 6, lastly, be sure you're working in her love language and not yours. I hope that's helpful, Bob. I think that if you work on those, you'll certainly be able to make more progress and you'll see more clearly where your lady is at. You need to tune into her moods and read her. Now, our second question today is from a friend of mine, Michelle, and she wanted to send in a question for the Word, which is the universe or God. I was kind of shocked when she said, this was her question, what's the most important thing to do each and every day? Now, I interpreted that erroneously, I admit, as what's a good morning routine? And I thought, really? If you could ask God one question, would that really be it? So my question to all of you is, what is the one question you would ask of God, aka the universe? If you had one question, what would it be? Send it to me, margo@margounlimited.com or to Coast, and I'll give you that address in a mo. This would be for the biggest and most important question you've ever asked. Send in this question and the thing you would like to ask God. No question is too sticky. It'll be really interesting to get some feedback on that. But back to what my friend said. And this is easy for me because I've received so many messages. I found one the other day that was 10 years ago. So I can probably answer this question easily. It's the consistent theme that comes through and is the most important thing to do every day. It is that you should remember who you really are. That means the big you, the you you're designed to be, the best of you. Recognize and be all that you are and can be. That's the most important thing to do every day. That was a tiny short question with its little answer, but I think it's a powerful one. Our third question today is from Adam. Adam says, hello, I love to cook and I want to hold a party and feed everybody, but I can't think of what to do that will be easy as well as a bit different. Do you have any suggestions, Margo? Well, I do actually, because I recently organised a party for my son's birthday and he'd invited a lot of people. I was determined not to get stuck in the kitchen and to spend the whole time working. So we had a poke party. For anyone who hasn't heard of this, it's Hawaiian. The word poke, P-O-K-E, simply means chunk in Hawaiian. In the past, poke was typically any meat or seafood that's cut into small chunks and marinated. When referring to poke nowadays, it's generally seafood, tuna or salmon. So you need to make sushi-style rice and then you add various toppings. Tuna or salmon, usually raw or marinated in sesame oil and soy. Then you go mad with toppings. Corn, edamame beans, both of which you can buy frozen and just tip into bowls, avocado, chop it up, shrimps or prawns, raw, marinated or pickled vegetables such as cucumber, carrots, radish. You can see all those colours coming together. And then sesame seeds and finely shredded nori, which is seaweed. And then you put that squirty Japanese mayo or sriracha mayo on top. So all you need to do is make a big pot of this rice, do the sushi thing with it with vinegar and sugar, and then you set up different bowls of the toppings. People can help themselves. Nothing needs to be hot. It looks colourful, it's fresh, it feels healthy, it's fun, and people can choose what they want, which means no matter what their diet is, they can pretty much accommodate it themselves without having to be a drama for you and making extra things. People really loved it. You can feed a lot of people like this. And if you're clever, you can get a team of choppers into the kitchen to do all those bits and pieces first. No previous experience required for that. So I know that's a great party idea, Adam, as I've done it myself, and that was for about 60 people. Hopefully that will help you to think that you can easily put together a fun party that's a bit different. Number four, today, our last question is about how to deal with a nasty person at work. Liz asks what to do when someone seems to just have it in for you and nothing you say or do seems to get them alongside. She said she feels kind of bullied. Well, my first instinct is to charm them. I would probably make a cake for them, but I think that if people feel you like them, they really can't resist liking you back. I think you should try this because if they're not being nice, it means they're not feeling nice about themselves. Bullies have issues with liking themselves. It's the junk in their life that they're trying to deflect by focusing on others. Poor bullies. Of course, we know it's completely unacceptable to treat others in a controlling or belittling way. Back to how to melt that cross person, Liz. Firstly, look directly at them and smile genuinely. That will take them by surprise and throw them off their game. The next morning, so you could do this in a series of days, you could use their name. That's step two. Then say something that doesn't require a response, like, lovely day today, Joe. Say her name's Joe. Smile and go on your way. So you're engaging with them in a gradual way, but one that doesn't require a response. You're not waiting for anything from them. Next, do something nice for them. Say you're getting coffee. You could just say, would you like a coffee? Finally, you must praise them for something good that they've done in front of others and in front of them. So if we're calling her Joe, you could say, Joe did this report and it really covers everything perfectly. Do you see what I'm doing? Start small and incrementally increase your feel-good stuff towards this person. They won't be able to resist it. Just see it like a game, even if it seems a bit galling because you know they've been awful. I think often with these things, they're like an experiment. If you can step into it like a kind of life experiment, detach from it, look on, play the game and see the results you get. Now, there's one more thing, and I think this is really important. You must now abandon all complaints about this person. No questionable nicknames. No speaking about them negatively to others, because that will undo your good work. Talk them up. It doesn't matter if they don't seem deserving of it. It's all about changing things from the inside out. You must think, speak, and act differently towards them. There's a sort of energetic power in that. Don't poo-hoo this until you've tried it. Make it an experiment. Let us know, Liz, how you go. Well, we're making really good time today, so I'm going to take the liberty of slotting in a little extra. Just some food for thought. I'm not sure there is much new under the sun, but new people pop up and say, wow, look what I've just thought up. In fact, they may not have thought it up first. Maybe it happened a century or two ago. Still, I find it encouraging when you read something from another time and place written by someone you've never met, but it still echoes exactly what you think. I may have time to share a few treasures I've discovered from the many books I've read around who we are and what we're really capable of, which is my single abiding quest to find out in life. The particular book I was going to read from is gone walkabout, it seems, so here's a juicy bit from a book called Life Without Limits by Robert Stone. This is about forgiveness. A research scientist at NASA Space Flight Center, Barbara Brennan, has studied and measured the human energy field for 20 years. She believes that if you have something within yourself that you won't accept, you actually create distortions in your own energy pattern that have to do with unforgiveness towards yourself. When you forgive yourself, you're actually unblocking the flow of energy in your field, so distortions can flush themselves out. And this allows for the resumption of normal life flow. This man continues by saying, the subconscious, oh, I find this fascinating, is like a subterranean chamber where all the memories are stored. These memories may be holding you back and blocking flow in your life. He says there are three areas to be addressed. The subconscious, and that's what I deal with in my therapy because it's hard to get to by yourself. The conscious, which is how we speak to and about ourselves, how we deal with the things we're aware of. And the superconscious, not a term we use a lot, but that's the big picture stuff. This author does a little exercise to forgive and unblock, which you may like to do now. This is an exercise to really forgive all of you, subconscious and conscious. You have to sit somewhere comfortably. This is not a driving one because you have to close your eyes. Close your eyes then and take three deep, deliberate breaths. Visualize a scene and a peaceful, serene place. Imagine a person has entered your space. Mentally see this person to be you, but taller and bathed in radiant light. Mentally rise and face your higher self, this person who's entered the room. Say, please forgive me for all my past mistakes and misconceptions. May this forgiveness be mutual. Mentally embrace your higher self and say, I love you. And then return to your seat mentally and open your eyes. You're wide awake. After you've done this, you must see that you have cleared the blocks in your life. Your energy field, if you like. Imagine in your mind's eye that everything is now flowing beautifully in your life, in relationships, in abundance, in happiness, because you have unblocked that area in yourself where you needed to forgive yourself. If you do things like this little exercise, it's really important not to talk it down afterwards, because that will undo what you've just done. And don't dismiss it straight afterwards, because if you do, it will be dismissed. Better to see these things like a fun experiment, as I explained earlier, than with skepticism, because that just shuts down any potential. I hope you enjoyed that. I think those little exercises can be very short but very powerful, and they can help us to clear things that have stuck in our lives. I figure it can't do any harm and it can do lots of good. So don't forget to send your questions in, no matter how icky and sticky, to me, Margo, at margounlimited.com, or to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz. We'd love to hear from you. Now, finally, our ending for the day is our word, our message from the universe. Look for the good in everything always. There is only good, actually, but you don't always feel like that when you can't see how things are lining up. Just start looking and keep going. Look for the good and you will never run out, because the list never ends. Don't just look for it, see only that. If you do that in every situation, you will never be subject to anything. Circumstances will never rule you. I love that. I don't think we're designed to be ruled by circumstances. Thank you very much for your fine company today. I look forward to seeing you next time on Ask Margo. I'm Margo Coatsworth.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.